I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. One of the more engaging books of the season is the latest from Steve Dangle Glynn. The popular broadcaster, podcaster, and YouTube star delivers his signature enthusiasm and frankness in hockey rants and raves. He is both humorous and honest as he takes on some of the greatest arguments amongst hockey fans, as well as starts new ones. Take coming up with a Mount Rushmore for goalies. The greatest goalies. He comes up with his four, then another four, and whether you agree with his case or not, the reader then thinks of their own, making for a fun experience reading the book. And as a casual hockey observer, the book is immediately accessible, and one can see why so many are drawn to the game. Steve is a long-suffering Toronto Maple Leafs fan, and he examines the joys and traumas of being a strident supporter of the team. He looks critically at the fan bases of not just his team, but others through the league. He speaks for the fan experience, too, critical of the cost of seeing the game, but lovingly painting the experience of going to a game in a way that makes it aspirational despite the price of admission. We'll talk about all of this and more, including where the name Dangle came from. Steve Glynn spent 9 seasons with Sportsnet and co-founded SDPN, a sports podcast network, where with the motto, sports are fun. You can find him throughout the world of social media at Steve Dangle is the usual handle. This new book is published by HarperCollins. We spoke last Thursday with Steve joining me from Ajax, Ontario. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Steve Glynn. Mr. Glynn, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks
Great
for
talking to you.
Nice to talk to you. Where did the Dangle come from?
Oh, man. It's a silly little fluke. My high school newspaper that I was a part of, because I was super cool, had this weird tradition of coming up with your own nickname.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend brought in this book, and it was a list of, there was like a list of names in it of like people that the author had come across in their life. And one of them was Floyd Dangle, and I thought that was so funny. So I was Steve Floyd Dangle Glynn. And when I made my YouTube channel, not ever thinking about making hockey videos on it, I just made it Steve Dangle. And then I started making hockey videos, and I was going to change my name, and I saw it was Steve Dangle. I went, oh, that's actually perfect. And so I kept it, and it's kind of stuck.
What I enjoy about the book a great deal is that you're writing as though you're talking to us. I mean, a lot of us can hear your voice as we're reading. Has that authenticity, I guess, has that always been important for you when you're communicating, whether it's in a book like this or on online, say, through videos and podcasts?
I think it's really important, and thank you for saying that. I think that means I did a good job. I think people are way too media savvy now, I almost feel when we feel like we're being performed to, we feel condescended in a way. And I think, you know, traditional hockey media can sometimes have that problem. It's almost like you don't always necessarily consider the audience. Like you're not doing a show to show all your buddies in hockey how smart you are. You're doing a show to entertain the masses. So that's what I'm trying to do. I don't claim to be anything that I'm not. I didn't play pro. I didn't play. I only got to playing in pretty recent years. I don't claim to be anything other than a fan. And so when I'm speaking to you, I'm speaking as a fan, a somewhat zealous and super committed and well-researched fan, but a fan.
But that's your gift, is that you're able to make casual observers of the game like I am. You know, I'll read about what happened last night in the paper. I may watch some of it if I'm flipping through the television. But you know, that's why. You've made the game compelling in a certain way, is because it's relatable or understandable to a lot of us. Well, was hockey something that was in your in your house, say, growing up?
Hockey was never forced on me. The Leafs were really good when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
which I guess shows how old I am. you know, winning series regularly and stuff like that. But it was never forced on me. My dad played a little growing up, but not much. My mom didn't play. You know, my uncles were pretty into it and stuff like that, but that was really the extent of it. I think in some ways, you know, well, hockey is your way to bond with people. And, you know, let's pretend we're in a therapy session right now. You know, when I was 3 and a half, my sister was born, and she was born at 24 weeks, which is extremely premature, and she has a number of issues. And, you know, I was never neglected, but, you know, because she required so much care, I was often left to my own devices. And you know, one of the things that I was always interested in when I was playing by myself was wrestling. Was a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right around WrestleMania 6 in Toronto and all that pandemonium.
Yeah.
But also professional hockey. You know, the Leafs and Leafs taking on Gretzky in the playoffs, and you know, sort of the last heydays of Gretzky, you know,
yeah,
before he started kind of ending up on the back nine. It was a really good era, really good era. And like, it didn't take much. It was stuff like getting sticker books and, you know, books where I could read about players and trace them, hockey cards and stuff like that. And you know, after playing with all those things and reading them and, you know, doing extra research, it's like, oh, and I can also watch it.
Mm.
You know, so yeah, I wouldn't always get to stay up till the end of the game. But when I did, I definitely, even whether the Leafs won or lost, I felt like I had beaten my parents.
Was it the Leafs for you because it was so close geographically? I mean, if you grew up, say, in Calgary or in Vancouver, it would have probably been the home team, right?
100%. You know, we grew up in Scarborough, Ontario, which is now part of Toronto, but when I was born, it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And I asked my dad, I go, why do we cheer for the Leafs? And he goes, oh, because that's our team. And I sort of went, oh, okay. And then, like, that was the end of it. Like, I didn't, like, it really didn't take much convincing. And, you know, now, you know, I have a 4-year-old. So right around the time I would have had that conversation with my dad. And, like, he's obsessed with the Leafs. And, you know, he wore a Leafs jersey in his school photo. And sometimes, like, I'm like, did I do this? Like, did I force the Leafs upon him? But it's, you tell him something once, and, you know, he looks up to you because you're his dad, and you know, he's like, well, what's your favorite team? I go, the Leafs. And he's like, that's mine too. Who's stinky? I go, Boston. He goes, yeah, Boston stinky. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, I haven't forced hockey on him because I haven't had to, if that makes sense.
I've got a friend here in Vancouver who's a lifelong Canucks fan, and he hates the Leafs. And this goes back, you know, he'll tell me things that Stafford Smythe did or Harold Ballard as the reason why he hates the Leafs. Now, as someone who's quite visible online as a Leafs fan, and I'm assuming a lot of your fans aren't just from the GTA, how do you deal with say you know, the comments and the sort of, about your team?
Well, here's what I need fans of all 31 other fan bases to understand. You will never dislike the Leafs more than Leafs fans, all right? you will always be number two in that regard. Just remember that 99% of the stuff you hate the Leafs for, they didn't do to you. Every year, the Leafs, who are, you know, probably the, you know, the biggest fan base, but also the least popular one amongst other fan bases. Every year, the Leafs give people who don't like the Leafs and Leafs fans more ammo.
Yeah.
So you're never going to dislike the Leafs more than I do. You know, this is my 18th season making a video after every Leafs game. And It's just time. You know, you get a thicker skin, and like if people want to insult the Leafs or pick on the Leafs or whatever, that used to be something that bugged me, and now I'm like, well, I'm not on the team. You know, so it's more from a discussion standpoint. I don't like when people just say stuff that's wrong.
Right.
You know, I like correcting them and being like, okay, you're trying to make a point that is just, it's a fabrication, right? Like, this isn't a matter of opinion. But like even the personal stuff, you know, okay, you're on the internet. Like, all I got to do is mute you and close my eyes. You know, it's easier said than done sometimes, but, you know, I was just at an event last night, book launch.
Uh-huh.
There were over 200 people there, shook hands with every one of them, took photos, everyone said such nice things, and, you know, why am I going to let a few negative comments affect me when, you know, I have a night as wonderful as that, right?
But, Steve, is this the year, though, for the Leafs?
No. Like, I feel like that's a very common, like, chirp, like, when it comes to the Leafs. And, listen, any fan base, I mean, fan means fanatic, right? So, like, any fan base is going to have a group of people who are like, yep, my team is winning every single year. But if you speak to the vast majority of Leaf fans, they don't think they're going to win. Like, most people are rational and evidence-based, and there's no reason or rationale for why you think the Leafs are going to win 4 series in a row when they've won 1 series since 2004. I think they've done some good things. I think they'll be a pretty good regular season team. I think they'll be in the playoffs, but win the cup. They gotta prove they're in, you know, a top 10 conversation, then work their way into the top 5, and then work their way into playoff respectability, because, like, you'd be hard pressed to even prove they're the best team in their division right now, because, I mean, Boston and Florida, I mean, Tampa's still there, and the final vestiges of whatever they have. It's a really difficult trophy to win.
So we're talking Thursday morning. Wednesday night was the opening game against Montreal. And I'm assuming that the you and your 200 friends were watching this game live, right?
We were.
Yeah.
And the Leafs can never just lose, can they? it's one thing to lose. Every game has a winner and a loser. Someone's got to win, someone's got to lose. If you lose, no big deal. When the Leafs lose, there's always got to be some sort of record associated with it. And last night, Sam Montembeau, goalie for the Montreal Canadiens, set a record for the most saves in a shutout in a season opening game. That's absolutely staggering. And it's so leafy. It wouldn't make sense if that happened to the Minnesota Wild. You know what I mean? It has to be the Leafs, always.
A friend of mine, though, said last night, as we were talking about the scores from last night, that at least your defense is I mean, that was the priority, and I guess it worked last night, didn't it?
It did. I mean, like, you know, it's not a doomsday scenario. They got nearly 50 shots, which is really good. They allowed fewer than 30 shots, which is really good. It's the beginning of the season. There's a lot of things to like about this team, but at the end of the day, the Leafs are right up there in the NHL in terms of fan bases that aren't necessarily willing to give their team a whole lot of rope.
Mm.
The Buffalo Sabres began their season in Europe against the Devils. They lost both games. They're 0-2. That's really not a cause for panic for most teams, but their fan base is sick to death of them. And even though they're doing a lot of good things, they have 2 really good young goalies, I like some of the things they're doing on defense, they haven't made the playoffs for over a decade, and their fans are kind of sick of okay, you're doing the right thing. Win. Mm. I'm investing my time watching this team, money watching this team win. And I think it's similar with the Leafs. Like, was it a bad game? No. Did they lose? Yes. Did they lose in record-breaking fashion? Of course they did. And I think fans are just sort of at the end of their tether.
You write in the book about the pressure of playing in a Canadian market, and being from Vancouver, I guess I can't understand that because it's not an American city, and there's a huge fan base here, and it's the dominant story in the sports pages and the news and the sort. I guess when Sheldon Keefe, as you write in the book, calls New Jersey the real NHL, does that mean that he's playing for a team that doesn't have this layer of scrutiny that's in every Canadian market?
That might be what he's talking about. And, like, to me, that's pathetic. I think in the NBA, you want to play for the Lakers. You want to play for the Knicks. You want to play for the teams that have the most pressure. And, I mean, in the NBA, if you're one of the best players, you're going to be on one of the best teams because stars have a bigger impact. And the best teams and the best players are on national television and in front of just as big a crowd as NHL teams. They don't shy away from it. That's what the money is for. Mm. You play on the biggest stage. That's why Steph Curry makes $62 million. Like, there might be NHL teams this year that don't pay their entire roster $62 million. And I just feel like in hockey, and there's lots of evidence, including that quote, that the sport doesn't embrace professional sports. Mm. Professional sports involves us. Right? You're the athletes, you've worked your entire lives, you're the coaches, you worked your entire lives to train and be elite and be the best in the world at your sport, and you think just by showing up and being the best, you deserve millions of dollars, and that's just not how it works. You need us. The money doesn't appear out of thin air. You have to appeal to us. Sometimes that's going to involve pressure. And I'm sorry. I apologize, hands and knees to the death for you. But I'm sure your checks all show up on time. Yeah. And you could always do something else.
So in that chapter of the book, you argue about the NHL players needing to embrace the spotlight. One of those things is to make the sport, say, more appealing to American viewers. And then of course you make the argument that more viewers, more fans, that's more money for the players at the end of the day, which I'm assuming they're not going to turn down. What does that do though? More money to the fan experience. I mean, I was just looking at Canucks tickets. I'd probably go to one game a year. And the price of, for most games this year has doubled than it was last season. And I don't think it was just because of the way the Canucks played. I think it's just the reality of everything. Things cost these days, everything has gone up in price. Won't that change the fan experience?
Well, I think we're crossing over into a different conversation. It's hockey versus, hey, the entire world's kind of not doing all that well right now. Mm. And inflation's sort of insane. I mean, one of the things I think's kind of funny is if you walk around any Leaf game, for example, notorious for their unbelievably expensive prices, I'd be surprised if half the people there bought their tickets. The tickets are so hard to get, you can't buy them. Growing up, I don't know if my parents have ever paid for Leafs tickets, ever. My uncle took me to my first game, And then from there, it's we went to one or two games a year because we would get them as like a Christmas present,
right,
or a birthday present, or something like that. So, you know, the fan experience, I think there needs to be more in it for the fans because, you know, commuting in a big city is a nightmare, and parking is a nightmare, and the concessions are insane. And one of the good things that some teams are doing, like Utah, for example, is they're making concessions super cheap, which is great. They just want you in the door, and the tickets might be a bit expensive, but, you know, I suppose that's the trade-off. And I'll take that trade-off over the experience in Toronto or Vancouver, where everything is expensive.
Yeah.
If you at least knock the price off of something, I might be able to meet you there. But I don't like where professional sports is going, where the average person has to remortgage their house in order to be able to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old enough to remember Toonie Tuesdays with the Toronto Blue Jays. And, you know, was the team as good when that deal was available? Well, obviously not. And did baseball players make as much money? Well, obviously not. You know, I don't know if we necessarily get back to that, but I think it's ridiculous that, you know, if you want to go to the game with, you know, your kids, it's going to cost you a car payment. And I don't know what the solution is there.
How many games do you get to every season?
Not nearly as many as you think. And I like that. As someone who is in hockey media, like I've seen how it can jade people, and you can take this thing that you love for granted, and I never want to do that. I love that a game for me is still a treat.
Mm.
I only saw one game at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto last year. It was actually that really fiery game between Toronto and Vancouver. Mark Giordano fought Dakota Joshua. There was another fight, too. Ian Cole and Max Domi, I think. That was the only game I saw in Toronto. And then I went to Sweden to cover the two Leaf games that they played in Sweden against Detroit and Minnesota. So I saw more games in Europe last year than I did in Toronto. And, you know, three games in a season, I think that's probably more than most people. But it's also maybe less than you would expect for someone who works in hockey.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned this game against Vancouver, and the first thing you mentioned are the two fights you saw. What's the future of fighting, and were it up to you, would we still see fights in hockey?
Well, I mean, I'm going to say what I'm going to say, but I got to acknowledge, when it comes to this argument, I'm a hypocrite. You know, if there's a fight, I'm standing up.
Mm.
If there's a fight, it's maybe the most noteworthy thing about that game, depending on what else happened in that game. You know, there was a line brawl between the Leafs and Canucks years ago, and I'd be hard-pressed to tell you the final score. What stood out was the fight. I think, you know, it is a way to settle scores. It does bring the fans in. That being said, it's not justifiable. Like, I think I can acknowledge that it's something that I enjoy and it's something I can't look away from, while also acknowledging, yeah, we shouldn't be able to do this. You're not allowed to do this in any other walk of life, and I know hockey, you know, professional hockey is not real life. But, you know, one of the things we talk about in the book is the hypocrisy of, you know, everyone stands up for a fight and they lose their mind, and then a player gets knocked out, and there might be like the initial cheer.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of, oh, and then when that player is starched on the ice, lying there, all of a sudden the building gets quiet. And it's like, what are you quiet for?
Yeah,
you were
yeah.
just cheering for that a second ago. And on TV, they go, well, you never want to see that. Yeah, you do. What do you think happens in a fight? sometimes you get knocked out. Sometimes you end up in the hospital. Sometimes you die. And I hope it's out of the sport before that happens.
Yeah.
But it just seems like that's what's going to do it. You know, neck guards are something that players didn't want to wear because they're kind of uncomfortable. And then a player dies, and, you know, a significant chunk of the league began wearing neck guards. We as a species tend to push things to the limit until, you know, we have to adapt. But we never do it a moment sooner. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one day, let's say fighting is banned in the next 10, 15 years. Like, I'm not going to try to justify it to watching fights and enjoying hockey fights to my kids. I'm not going to try to justify it now.
Yeah.
It's something I get excited for and I enjoy, and I can't really justify it because it's something that you probably shouldn't be able to do.
This career that you've had, you've been away from Sportsnet now for about, a year or so?
Yeah, about a year.
Yeah, and you have your own company. Is this what you could have imagined for yourself growing up? I mean, this is what you would have liked for yourself, I guess. Is that right?
Oh, I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I didn't even really apply to the program that I ended up getting into. Because, you know, I didn't ever think I would work in sports, and I thought all those jobs went to former players. Then I started my YouTube channel, and people started watching it, but that was 2007, and being a YouTuber wasn't exactly a viable career path.
Yeah.
Now it is. Like, you can tell any kid, like, I'm a YouTuber, and kids are bold. They'll just be like, how much money you make? I got asked that by a cashier the other day. I was just like, I was like, wow, I didn't know you would just ask that. You know, anytime you talk to someone at a bar, it starts with, oh, that must be a fun job. And after a few drinks, it's just pat you on the shoulder and, hey, how much money you make? You know, but working for myself is not something I could have imagined. Like, you know, when I was in school, you know, sort of the height of the 2008 recession, and here we are, you know, this group of people all trying to break into the same business that's shrinking, and, you know, there's layoffs every day, because the first thing to go in a recession is advertising, and, you know, companies like The Score are shutting down or being sold, and it just seems like, getting a job at one of the big companies and then getting high enough in those big companies to make a career of it would be borderline impossible. So I never really did think, oh yeah, I'll be able to do this on my own. It wasn't until very recent years.
Yeah.
You know, now that YouTube is a lot more prominent and you can make a living on the internet. It wasn't until recent years I was like, oh, maybe I can make a go of this on my own. And, you know, I had a great time at Sportsnet, but something about doing it yourself that's so rewarding.
Well, long may it continue. I enjoyed this book a great deal. I so appreciate your time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Steve.
Thank you. It was great talking to you, too.
The book is called Hockey, Rants, and Raves. It's published by HarperCollins. Its author, Steve Dangle-Glynn, joined me on the line from Ajax in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.